Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast with Mark Pearson. We are going to do a double take, a number two on a podcast that we did a long time ago, because there are things that have changed and things that have happened recently that make this topic even more applicable today, which is active investing versus passive investing. If you've been paying attention, you realize that last quarter, some poop hit the fan. And because of that, some of you missed out on some stuff. So, Mark, is that where we're headed here?
That's right, Big Daddy.
All right.
Finally, an opportunity to talk about the power of active investing versus passive. By the way, I think we maybe have talked a little bit about this, that actually I believe that Wall Street, to a certain degree, shockingly, mischaracterizes the term passive and active.
Yeah, I'd like for you to let's start with a good operational definition on both, please.
Yeah, so here's the deal. When you think about active versus passive investing, Wall Street says passive investing is you buy index funds and just hold on to them, right? And if you forget about it, right? Because it's long term, right? So active investing, of course, from a definition standpoint, requires a hands-on approach, typically by a portfolio manager or other so-called active participant. Passive investing involves less buying and selling and often results in investors buying index funds or other mutual funds that are, you know, passive in nature. So pretty self-explanatory.
Uh-huh.
But what Wall Street does is they focus on passive investing beating active investing. There's this whole debate about index funds outperforming active managers. Part of the problem I have with that theory is, does anyone really look at the letter or the disclosures on that kind of thing? In other words, is it an apples to apples comparison? You know, one of the examples I'll give you is we are a global asset allocation strategy, right?
Mm-hmm.
We buy small cap, mid cap, large cap. We buy growth. We buy value as categorized by Wall Street. We buy U.S., we buy international, we buy emerging markets. And we are asset allocated across the world. But you would be shocked how many clients continue to want to compare a global asset allocation strategy to the S&P 500, which is an absolutely incorrect, inaccurate form of comparison, as we've written in our white papers in the past. Comparison is a thief of all joy. And Wall Street, as we've talked about, continues to make this idea of investing to be as cookie cutter as possible, as simple as possible, as easy as possible. But those are all fine, but are they the best possible? Because quite frankly, just because it's easy, simple to understand, doesn't mean it's the best. And personally, I want the best. And so what I want to do today is talk about the active versus passive and the actuality that you can be both. Shocking.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
No one talks about that, by the way.
No, it's always an either or, right?
What's that?
I said it's always an either or, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. So let's talk about what that means for a minute.
Okay.
Before we dive into why active is so popular or so important. You ever heard of a company called Visa?
Just a few times, every time I swipe my plastic card.
Yeah. And by the way, thank you. As a shareholder since the public, as a shareholder since the day it went public, every time you have swiped your card since it went public back in 2006 or 7, we've made money. I appreciate that. A form of passive investing, may I say, as we purchased the stock the day it went public and still have purchased it throughout the years and have held on to it for our clients. i.e. buy and hold. That's what passive says. Go buy an index, just buy the market, buy the index and hold it. What does that do to you? It limits your flexibility. It limits your ability to take advantage of opportunities like we had in the fourth quarter of last year. The first 20% correction since, frankly, the financial crisis. Now, according to Morningstar, a little bit older data, the fact of the matter is, Matt, that 20% corrections happen on average once every 5 years. We hadn't had one since the financial crisis. We almost did in 2011. I think we were down about 19% or 18% or something like that. But we hit 20 for the first time since the financial crisis. So it had been 10 years, right? And if people somewhat get lackadaisical, i.e., they become passive investors, right? Because, oh, the market should just go up every year. My portfolio should go up every year. And then wham, you get a correction, and all of a sudden people are stuck flat-footed. We had Chuck on. We've talked about the correction, and $20 billion coming out of stocks last quarter, in last December, the largest outflow in December, only to see first quarter of 19 be absolutely stunning, right? And people stuck sitting in cash. So passive investing, where they say buy the index, just buy the market. Why can't you be a passive investor and invest in great in businesses and hold on to them? Buy and hold, and then use volatility to buy more of those great businesses when they go on sale. Now, does that sound like passive investing? Or would you say it's more active?
I think it's participatory investing. I don't know. I don't necessarily feel like we've even defined that word yet.
Thank you. In other words, you've just driven home my point.
Oh.
There is no such thing as active and passive investing.
Oh, yay!
There's no such thing.
Sure.
Even the passive index funds are adjusted. Stuff is moved around within the index funds. Money comes into the index funds. The money manager's got to buy more of those stocks to make up the percentages that make up the S&P 500. How about those apples? Huh?
I have a couple of quick things. So I want to throw out a couple of other technical or things that I've heard from other people. Number one, how would the buy and hold people define dollar cost averaging if it's not active management?
That's a great question. You can't dollar cost average, if you will, when it's passive. I mean, if you're adding more money,
right,
you are buying more. Therefore, you are actively investing. See, Wall Street wants to paint a rosy picture of it's just static. Everything is static. You buy the index, forget about it. Now, people who are who would argue with my position would say, no, what we're saying about passive investing is you buy the index because active managers, in other words, managers who invest in a bucket of stocks differently than the S&P 500 do not perform as well. Okay? Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is a lot of times those comparisons are not accurate, number one. Number two, what happens in most portfolios is they end up being over-diversified and over-asset allocated. Because I can tell you, I've seen so many portfolios where they own, you know, the S&P 500 index, they own the NASDAQ index, they own the Russell 2000 index, they own the ACWI index, they own the Internet MSCI index. They got all these index funds, they own thousands and thousands of stocks. And a true passive would say, well, you just buy the indexes and then hold it, and because active managers don't perform as well. Taken into zero consideration, now let's get to the meat and why you buy active.
Okay.
Follow me so far?
Yeah, I want to back up just a smidge, because that's what you've done with Visa, right? The dollar cost averaging thing, right? So you owned it and you've held it, but when it's on sale, like we've talked about before, I'm assuming that you would probably buy more.
That is exactly right.
Okay.
And that's where when you look at an investor's objectives, what they want to accomplish. Look, things happen in life that alter plans. We need money for some reason. Mm-hmm. We're going to buy a house, we're going to buy a car. We got sick, I lost my job, whatever the case may be, that it's very, very rare that, in fact, I've never seen actually completely passive investing to the extent where people just buy something and hold it forever and don't do anything with it. I'm sure it's happened somewhere with somebody, but not generally speaking. Therefore, active investing should be a function of investing in great businesses over time, the passive component, and the active component being the volatility that creates the opportunity to take advantage of buying more of that business on sale. We're not even talking about, number one, investment customization. What if you don't want to own certain types of businesses? Mm-hmm. Number two, big one, individually tailored tax efficiency options. We got a new client, seven-figure portfolio, highly successful guy, had no idea what tax efficient investing was.
Whoa.
Tax loss harvesting. Never heard about it.
Ouch.
Because most people don't talk about it because a lot of people don't have that flexibility. A lot of people don't take advantage of it. What is tax loss harvesting? Let me give you a great, very specific example I did last year. Okay. Have a client, new money comes in. During the correction, we completely, changed the portfolio because the correction's happening. We're selling his old positions and getting him into his asset allocation. Okay. During that period, he had profits. We had sold to buy our new positions. Because remember, we're buying businesses long term. So if we got a correction, let's get out of the other stuff. Let's manage the tax. Let's manage this tax efficiently, but let's position the portfolio as much as we can going forward, right?
Mm-hmm.
So during that process, we had bought Baidu. And Baidu, which is, of course, the Chinese version of Google, had a fairly sizable correction going into December. And we decided that we're going to sell it and take a loss. Now, it wasn't a huge loss, but it was a loss enough that every loss you take offset gains, right? That's real dollars in an investor's pocket that they don't think about. What do I mean by that, folks? What I mean is, if I take a stock and sell it at a loss, as long as I don't buy it back for at least 30 days, that loss offsets gains, which means the gains that I had no longer get paid tax on. Real dollars in my pocket. But the whole market was correcting, right? So I decided, you know what? What we need to do here is we need to hedge our position here. So I went and bought Alibaba. Now, not an exactly same type of company as Baidu, but in China, similar movement, similar investors, similar growth potential and the such, right? Baidu is out of the portfolio for 30 days. Alibaba, in the meantime, over the next quarter goes up 30%. Okay. So now I'm owning Alibaba with a 30% gain in 3 months during the correction. Baidu, I've sold at a loss and have come back and actually bought it back at a cheaper price 30 days later. And now I own both stocks with a gain. Most importantly, I lowered my taxes by doing the tax loss harvesting.
Right.
So we did that with several positions. You can't do that with passive investing. So everyone focuses on fees, the cost of an index fund, And the reality is that cost is not just a fee I pay. Cost is also what's referred to as opportunity cost. And what does that mean? That means the cost of missing out on an opportunity to take advantage of buying something when it's on sale. By the way, this client is so dang tickled pink because not only did we reposition the entire portfolio, minimize his tax base, but his portfolio is doing phenomenal in the first quarter. After the first quarter, his portfolio, I'm not even going to give the number because I don't want people to talk about returns, but I will tell you it was significantly higher than the S&P 500.
Well, let's look at what happened in the last quarter, because I mean, you just gave a couple of other examples. How do you take advantage outside of tax loss harvesting with a correction with this engaged investing or participatory investing versus active versus passive? Would you mind?
Absolutely. Okay. Question. So this gets a little bit into the weeds, but I think it's important for people who want to functionally understand when you work with an active manager, how deep it can go. And I'm not even going to go that deep.
Okay.
But here's the deal. We had three things happen starting in September and October that I was aware of with my investment committee. Three things. Number one, there was greater talk and concern related to the possibility of a recession. Okay. And as part of that, we looked at our numbers. We didn't see a recession coming, which is why we were super aggressive in buying in the correction. But if you are thinking there could be, there are hedging positions you can take. We had three semiconductor stocks in our portfolio, NVIDIA, STM Micro, and Micron. We had owned all three stocks going back to 2016. Substantial gains. I mean, substantial. And semiconductors are literally cyclical in nature. You buy them at low points of cycles, you sell them at high points. So what we had done in October, literally for an example, we sold NVIDIA at $260 to $265 a share. And by the time December came, people realized that they weren't going to have a recession like they thought. The Feds had changed their stance. By that time, NVIDIA was $137 a share. It was the number one worst performing stock in the S&P 500 in 2018, while being the number one best performing stock in 16 and 17. So knowing that and knowing the valuation got so oversold, because remember, stock movement, man, this is very important for the listeners. The movement of stocks up and down on a daily basis is completely irrational. There's no rational. The rationality of a movement in stock only happens over time. That's why it's time in a stock, not timing a stock, right? So we decided, holy cow, we've just been given a gift. We bought it back, which I don't remember on a semi-stock doing this ever over the years, 20 years I've owned semi-stocks. But I was like, this is unbelievable. So, I mean, at 265, I'm thinking, okay, this thing's going to pull back to 200, 190 maybe in this recession. But this is still the leader. Their fundamentals long-term haven't changed. 137 I buy it at. After I bought it, it went to 133. I may have picked up a little bit in that time frame, but not much. Most of it was bought at 137. Today, 4 months later, it trades at 190. You don't get those opportunities often. So let me back up here. So I sold three semi stocks. That's the first thing that happened. So that raised cash. We knew we were going to see more volatility in the markets. We knew things were going down. We had cash to buy more of our stuff on sale, to the tune of about 10 to 12% of total portfolio. So 12% cash was a nice position to be in. Secondarily, in August or September, we had one of our holdings get bought. It was called Mazor Robotics. It was bought by Medtronic, and it raised more cash there. We had also had cash sitting there to buy more of stuff because the markets had moved so well over the summer. One of the things that active management does, you just don't do it cookie cutter. You just don't buy things for the sake of buying things when money comes in. You buy it when you think it's time to be buying it. So we sat on a boatload of cash in November and December that we were able to put to work buying Celgene, which we've talked about on previous podcasts, that got bought by Bristol Myers first of the year, rebuying NVIDIA at much lower prices, buying more of our core holdings that we own. It's the idea of process, Matt, to answer your question about how do you have cash, how do you do this? The other thing that's important to know is your sell discipline dictates how you sell, when you sell, and why you sell. In other words, if the long-term fundamentals have changed with business, you sell it. But if you start going through a correction, you maybe sell weaker positions in favor of buying stronger positions in the correction. Because when you're making an investment, you're not making it for the next 3 to 6 months. You're making it for the next 3 to 10 years. So you don't really care what happens in the short term. You care what happens in the long term. This is the power of flexibility. This is full circle going back to our four keys, which we did in one of our original podcasts. Mm-hmm. Four keys to a successful investing. Philosophy and strategy. Invest in great businesses over time. Strategy, I won't go through all that today, but the other two, flexibility and transparency, knowing what you own and why you own it, and having the flexibility to take advantage of buying more of those great businesses on sale. And frankly, when you look at that correction, I mean, I can go down the list of companies we bought more of in this pullback, which is one of the reasons why the performance coming out of that for our clients has been substantially higher than what's going on with regular markets. The fact of the matter is that we haven't had a lot of volatility over the last 7-8 years.
Right.
Historically, you do. And volatility is picking up. And volatility is good. Now, Wall Street doesn't tell you that. Warren Buffett does, but Wall Street doesn't. Why? Because in most of the cases for investors, they don't have the flexibility to take advantage of buying stuff when there is volatility. They got to ride it out. That's why their financial advisor tells them to sit tight. We're in for the long haul. I mean, it's like saying, don't buy on sale because, you know, I mean, you don't need anything on sale. You can pay full price because you're going to use it for the long term anyway.
Yeah.
You always want to buy on sale.
I agree, but I'm going to play mean guy here again. And it seems that I'm trying to do this. I'm trying to do this on every podcast just because, you know, you're so damn persuasive. You know, you're so confident in what you're saying. Okay, so here's what it is. Here, 2 points. Number one, you just said, and I could play it back for you if I wanted to, that it's not timing the market, it's time in the market. I hear that from my buy and hold people all the time. That is their saying. I hear them say it all the time. And here's the part two of that, which is you're talking about, and I'm air quoting here, taking advantage, right, of stocks that are on sale, right? The volatility. Right. How is that not timing the market?
Oh, great question. Because first of all, you're not investing in a market, you invest in great businesses.
No, that's not fair. Time, stop. Dude.
But that's true. And if a business goes on sale, you buy it.
Oh, that's, I was hoping you'd, I thought you were going to have a little quip like that, because I've been interviewing you long enough to know what you were probably going to say, but I really wish this would just sink in with more people. I know that we're getting a lot more listeners and you're getting a lot more exposure, but that was such a great retort to something that so many clients hear from their advisor.
Right. You don't invest in the stock market, you invest in great businesses. The stock market is nothing more than the greatest tool ever created to bring buyers and sellers of businesses together. The difference is financial advisors tell you are invested in the market. No, you're not. You invest in businesses. You actually own pieces of businesses. Mm-hmm. The market's just where you go to buy it and sell it. But it's word phrasing here, people are twisting words. Call it what it is. You're investing in businesses. Therefore, is it important to know what businesses you own?
Yes.
A lot of people say no. I hire someone to do that. Okay, that's great. That's fine. But at the end of the day, somebody's got to know what businesses are owned so you can take advantage of opportunities to help the clients out. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line. You always hate when
I'm going to stump you one of these days. I'm telling you that right now. I must not be doing enough homework before I get you on these podcasts. But I really thought I would have got you on that one. But all right. Well, that's people are going to have to stay tuned. I am going to stump Mark Pearson. I'm putting that on tape right now at some point. It's probably not going to happen anytime soon, but I'm going to get it. All right. Look, closing thoughts. What does everybody need to know about this big picture philosophical shift that you are at the forefront of trying to make consumers understand?
The bottom line is there is talk on Wall Street that we're entering a new era where active investing may be more beneficial than passive investing. I've always said that active is more beneficial. I'm not into timing when you should own passive or active, because you do both, right? But there's a structural component of an index that would lean one towards saying it's time to be more active than passive. And that has to do with what the top holdings are in the S&P 500, the percentages that are owned of those positions in the S&P 500, and the overall impact they have to the index. And so at the end of the day, you are going to start hearing more talk about active versus passive investing. And my belief is that the best of both worlds is how you invest. And that is investing in great businesses over time, passively, and actively taking advantage of buying more of them on sale when they go on sale.
All right, Mark, what's a good way for everybody to reach out to you guys to find out more how they can engage?
Thank you. You can go to investwithclarity.com. Click on the link to talk to an advisor. Click on anything you want there with lots of free white papers. Our podcasts are linked there. Feel free to take a look at our stress test. If your portfolio is $250,000 or more, We have a free, no cost, no obligation investment stress test that people can take a look, a deep dive into their portfolio to help them really understand where the potential risks are in accomplishing their investment goals. So investwithclarity.com.
Wonderful, Mark. Thank you very much for your thought leadership again today.
My pleasure. Always good to be with you.
All right. If you have not subscribed to that podcast, make sure you click that subscribe now button below and also share this with your friends and family. If you know somebody who really does need to invest with clarity, this is the podcast for them. So for everybody at Nepsis and the Invest with Clarity team, we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.